good. All right, enough. Where are all the sickos? Nobody looks like they're sick in here. My name's Mickey Bush, and I'm a fully conceited alcoholic. Yeah, probably an addict, too. I'm a real alcoholic, but I did mountains of drugs. Anybody else here do drugs? And the rest of you lying mothers, I know drugs. Drugs, D-R-U-G-S. Devil's revenge upon God's subjects. Yeah, that's what drugs are. So we're going to be talking about alcoholism and alcohol, but if you're a real alcoholic like me, you know, I just did everything. I did drugs. I did everything. Didn't matter what it was. I obsess over everything. Except work. Oh, don't. No, no. No, no. No obsessing over work. Yeah, don't like work. Yeah. So, but I'm a fully conceited alcoholic. And I identify as a fully conceited alcoholic because in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, this beautiful book, it says on page 30, we learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. So that meant that there was two first steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's a pisser, isn't it? It's bad enough with one. But now we got two first steps. Holy shit, you know. We learned we had to fully concede to our innermost self that we were alcoholic. This is the first step in recovery. So it's the first step in recovery, but it's not the first of the 12 steps. That's a totally different step, though it's often confused. And so I identify as a fully conceded alcoholic, you know. I am an alcoholic. I'm a total alcoholic. It's not just a part of me alcoholic or a big part of me that ain't alcoholic. I'm all alcoholic, see? So consequently, being a real alcoholic, I have the right to be dysfunctional in as many ways as I like. You know? Don't tell me I'm limited or restricted. If there's good dysfunction out there, I want my share of it. You know? And of course, if there's good share, being a real alcoholic, I don't just want my share. What do I want? More! I just want more. Just want more of everything. Doesn't matter what it is, I want more of it. Doesn't matter what you got, I want more of it. I'd even want more herpes than you. You know what I mean? You know? I was out there looking at those cookies and those biscuits and stuff out there, those sticky ones with the cream in them. And I was looking at them like that, and the sensible person in me said, you don't need none of them to like sticky shit. You don't need none of that sticky shit. You got love handles no one's grabbing. You know? You don't need none of that sticky shit. And then the little boy inside me, said, well, I like sticky shit. What about me? What about me? I like sticky shit. And then the alcoholic said, take six pieces, grab them. Oh, I see you can relate, huh? Oh, yeah, don't worry. So I'm a real alcoholic, and, you know, I'm glad to be an alcoholic. You know, I love being an alcoholic, as a matter of fact. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983, before some of you were born, right? And I was so sick when I got here. I was so sick that I didn't know I was sick. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be so sick that you don't know you're sick? That's really sick. And if you're as sick as I was when I got here, so sick that you come into a room full of alkies, like good alkies, like this room, good alkies seems to me, and you scan the room, because I'm a good scanner. You know, I had to learn real early when you walk in somewhere, you had to be able to scan the room to decide who was going to be the next victim, you know. And you scan the room and you think, well, I ain't as sick as him. He's sicker than me. Do you know how sick that is? Do you know how sick it is to be in a room full of alkies thinking you ain't as sick as the next guy? That's really sick. So if you're in here tonight wondering whether you is or whether you isn't a real alcoholic or not, I want you to know that I can relate to being as sick as you don't think you are. You know, really, really sick. And I never knew. I never knew when I got here. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I never knew nothing. I never knew nothing about nothing. I thought I knew everything about everything. I thought I knew everything there was to know. When my butt's on a bar stool and I'm drinking, I know everything. It don't matter what you've done, where you've done it, who you've done it with, how many times you've done it, I've done it more and with better. Yeah. I know everything. You want to know how the space shuttle blew up? I'll tell you. Because I know. In fact, I should have been on it, as a matter of fact. But I was busy at the time drinking. Yeah. Alcoholics are very busy drinking, you know, so I miss being on the space shuttle. Bloody good job, you know. But, you know, that's what... But I actually knew nothing about nothing. I knew nothing about nothing, thinking I knew everything about everything. I was just like the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, the first page, blank. You know, look, empty. And that's what I was, you know. And, you know, I get to Alcoholics Anonymous on January the 15th, 1983. And I don't know nothing about nothing. I never came in here with any desire to quit drinking. I never came in here with the only requirement for membership. I never knew nothing. I never knew why I did what I did. I never knew why you did what you did. I knew nothing about Alcoholics Anonymous, nothing about meetings, nothing about 12 steps. I knew nothing about nothing when I got here. I was so sick, I didn't know I was sick. But of course I do today. Because the first thing I ever heard was, keep coming back. Before I even got into the meeting, there was two dudes outside the meeting. Now, I don't know nothing about one alcoholic, you know, the love of one alcoholic for another alcoholic. And I don't know nothing about alcoholics participating in their recovery. I don't know nothing about doing commitments at a meeting to support the meeting. I don't know nothing about nothing. I don't know that these two dudes outside the meeting are greeters, greeting sick, wet alcoholics like me. And as I approached that meeting, one of these guys stepped forward with his hand out. Now, I got to tell you, this was in West Hollywood, Los Angeles. Now, I don't know whether you know West Hollywood or not, but it's a very special part of town. It's commonly referred to as Boys Town. You know, Boys Town, where all the nice boys live. If you don't know what I'm talking about, it's the kind of town where if you drop your wallet on Santa Monica Boulevard, you've got to kick it up to Sunset before you can pick it up, you know. Don't mean nothing about nothing. If you're gay, don't be offended. No one cares, you know. But as I approached that meeting, one of these nice boys put his hand out. I went, what do you want? He said, I want to welcome you to AA. I said, what? He said, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I said, what? And the other guy stepped forward with his hand out. He said, keep coming back. I thought he said, keep coming on my back. I said, why? He said, keep coming back. I said, what for? He said, we love you. I said, I bet you do. You know? I scooted round them and went into the community centre. There was a community centre there in a park and you know, they tell me I was all grey, shaky and smelly, you know. I'd just come off a 3-day run and they tell me that later on they told me that I was like one of those zombies out of a Michael Jackson video. You know those zombies. I felt like I'd just come out of the bar in Star Wars. Remember that bar in Star Wars? I walked round them and I walked to this community centre, and there was a smallish room, about 30 people perhaps in there, and I stood in the doorway, and I can remember so clearly, I remember looking into this room, and they smoked in meetings then, and the room was full of smoke, and there was 30, perhaps 40 people in the room. Everybody was talking. Everybody was talking. Nobody listening. Everybody talking. Talk. Room full of alcoholics. You know? I remember looking in the room going, wow, what is this? Holy shit. You know, there were some celebrities in the room and I already knew. And I went, wow, what's this? I couldn't even, I went, wow. And down the center of the room came this English rock and roll singer that I'd known for a long time. And he walked up to me and he put his arms round me. I went, what are you doing? He said, giving you a hug. I went, get away from me, you goddamn pervert. Get away from me. He said, we've been saving you a seat. I said, what for? I said, what are you doing here anyway? You're bloody mental, you are. He said, I'm leading the meeting. I said, how come? He said, I'm 22 months sober. I wasn't impressed. I can remember, I don't want to catch that. What, you know, sober? What's that? He said, talk to these guys. I said, I don't want to talk to no guys. He said, that's what we do here. We talk to each other. I said, screw you. Because you know, I didn't want to talk to no guys. I said, you know. But guess what? They wouldn't shut up. You know? These two guys, you know, they had their, like, noses in my ear going, talk. And I was going, yeah. And one of these guys, he got up in my face, he said, you're an alcoholic. I said, what? He said, you're an alcoholic. I said, what? That's a bloody mean thing to say to somebody. Just say a thing like that to a dude for. You're an alcoholic. I said, why'd you say that? He said, because if it looks like a duck and walks like a duck and sounds like a duck and smells like a duck, it's a bloody duck. Just because he's been taking some shit and thinks he's an eagle, no, you're a duck. You're a duck, I'm a duck. Quack, quack. I went, holy shit. I couldn't believe it. I thought, this is the bloody funny farm, man. You know, guys loving on you and shit, and ducks and eagles and shit. What the hell's this? I never knew. I thought about it. I thought, alcoholic. He said, I'm an alcoholic. Holy shit, alcoholic. Alcoholic? Wow. I'm an alcoholic. He said, I'm an alcoholic. I thought, wow, alcoholic. Wow. I'm an alcoholic. I thought, wow, far out. Far out. I'm alcoholic. Holy shit. Alcoholic. He said I'm an alcoholic. They've been locking me up in nut wards for years. They've been locking me up in insane asylums. They've been taking me away and putting me in homes and nut wards and criminal insane asylums. I'm not crazy. I'm alcoholic. Far out. I thought, wow, far out. I'm alcoholic. Being alcoholic was like a step up for me. Oh, wow. Far out. And I've loved being alcoholic ever since. I ain't crazy, I ain't nuts, I'm alcoholic. Wow! I couldn't wait to run home and tell my best friend, the one who that morning had kicked me out of his house, I'd get out. I said to him, I said, hey, guess what? I'm an alcoholic, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life's unmanageable. He said, no shit! I thought he was going to be surprised. He weren't surprised. I was the only one surprised. Everybody else knew, except me. I was the only one who didn't know that I was an alcoholic. Everybody else knew. Everybody else had all suffered putting up with me all those years. And I've loved being alcoholic ever since. And later, I didn't understand it at the time, but later on, the duck and the eagle story, you know, like made sense to me. And if you're new here tonight, you know, I say the same to you. Keep coming back. You know, if you don't understand what we're talking about, and if you don't understand the language, if you don't understand what we're saying, keep coming back, because little by little, it will begin to make sense to you as you stick around and stay sober, and we wish you well. And so the newcomers that were here tonight, I welcome you as you welcomed me, and I want you to keep coming back. And gradually, it makes sense what people say around here and what the beautiful book says and what our message of recovery says, even though you don't understand it in the beginning like I didn't. Everything I know about myself and everything I know about recovery and everything I know about this disease is all in retrospect. I didn't know any of it at the time. I never knew nothing about nothing when I got here. See, so I do. I welcome you to keep coming back. And that duck and the eagle story started making sense. Because what he was really doing, he was defining for me what it was about me that made me alcoholic. See, I was alcoholic, and I'd been incarcerated, and I'd been locked away. I've been in places cuckoos wouldn't fly over, you know. But they didn't know what was wrong with me. They couldn't define what was wrong. They knew how to hurt me. They knew how to bash me up. They knew how to chain me to padded cells. And they knew how to shoot me up with tranks. And they knew how to zap me on electric machines and violate me. But they didn't know how to get through to me what was wrong with me. And if they knew what was wrong with me, they didn't know how to do it and tell me what was wrong with me. Not like alcoholics do with other alcoholics. That's why it's so precious that we come together, one alcoholic with another alcoholic, to do together what we couldn't do apart. And the very first meeting that I ever got to, an alcoholic got on my face and told me what was wrong with me. I went, wow, I'm alcoholic. You know, today, my name's Mickey Bush, I'm an alcoholic, I'm in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, I know what's wrong with me and I know what to do about it. That's a lot of shit right there. I never brought that in here with me. Didn't even know what they were talking about. But the duck and the eagle story, they later explained, was what it was about me that made me alcoholic. See, I asked a lot of people what it was about me that made me alcoholic. And what they did, they told me what they did because they were alcoholic. They told me what the consequences and the results of being alcoholic were. Not what it was about me that made me alcoholic. See, and there's a total difference about that. See, what makes me alcoholic isn't what I do because I'm alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic isn't alcoholic addictive behavior. What makes me alcoholic isn't that one's too many and 1,000 ain't enough. What makes me alcoholic isn't that I can't control and enjoy my drinking. That's true if you're alcoholic, but you could read that in a library book. That's not what makes me alcoholic. That's what I do because I'm alcoholic. What makes me alcoholic is the little duck and the eagle story. See, what makes me alcoholic is that I have an abnormal reaction to alcohol. I react abnormally to alcohol. My reaction to alcohol is different to the non-alcoholic. And this is the same for all of us. I got three sisters and a brother. They're not alcoholic. They don't know why I drink. I don't know why they don't. I ask them, why don't you drink? They say, I don't like it. I say, what? What don't you like about it? They say, I don't like the way it makes me feel. I say, what? How does it make you feel? They say, well, if I ever one too many, I feel sick. I say, sick? You got to drink past that. Stops at sick. I don't stop at sick. I puke, but I don't stop drinking. Oh, that's handy. Made room for some more. You know what I mean? They don't laugh. They think I'm weird. Any other weirdos in the room tonight? Yeah, no shit. You know, they don't laugh. They think I'm weird because alcohol don't do for them what it does for me. My three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. I'm alcoholic. They're not alcoholic. Same blood, same family, same environment, same everything. I'm alcoholic. They're not alcoholic. I got news for you. My three sisters and brother got two kids. Well, I got two kids. I've never been married. I've never had a wife of my own. But I got two kids, you know. I'm alcoholic, my kids ain't. My three sisters and brother ain't alcoholic, their kids are. That's weird shit, isn't it? See, that's what we're dealing with here. And I didn't know. I never knew what it was about me that made me alcoholic. And I asked people and they told me what they did because I was alcoholic. Once I start, I can't stop. One's too many, 1,000 ain't enough. I can't stop from starting. You know, I can't control and enjoy my drinking. Once I put a drink in my body of any time I'm off. All that was true, but that wasn't what made me alcoholic. What made me alcoholic was the duck and the eagle story. What made me alcoholic was the abnormal reaction to alcohol that I have. See, my abnormal reaction to alcohol is that alcohol changes my perception of reality. See, and that's what alcohol does for the alcoholic that it don't do for the normal person. We all think it does, but it don't. Alcohol don't change their perception of reality. Even if they like a drink, even if they get drunk once in a while, it don't change their perception of reality like it does for me. You know, my three sisters and brother, once in a while they have a drink, once in a while they even get drunk. But come Monday morning, they take their kids to school, they pay their bills and take care of their responsibilities. Not me, I go to Tijuana. See, because it don't do that for them. What it does for me, it changes me from a duck to an eagle. It changes my perception of reality. And why do I want a change in perception of reality? Because I can't stand reality, that's why. I hate reality. I don't like reality. Screw reality. When I drink, I don't have to deal with reality. It changes my perception. Alcohol, see, I go out drinking as a delicate little duck, have a few stiff ones, and turn into an eagle and go swooping around looking for prey. It don't do that for the normal person. See? I call it a nerd remover. Do you guys know what I mean by a nerd? Do you know what a nerd is? You are? You're a nerd? He's a nerd. See, alcohol removes the nerdness. I feel like a nerd, I drink, and I don't feel like a nerd. I feel like a nerd, and I drink, and I don't care if I'm a nerd. I feel like a nerd, and I drink, and you're a goddamn nerd. Alcohol changes my perception of reality. See? Mary in my home group back there in Santa Monica, she's a delicate little dudette. A badass drunk. Oh, she's a badass drunk, is Mary. She puts it as well as I've ever heard anybody put it. You know, she says when she drinks, she feels wittier, prettier, and tittier. Yeah. I know exactly what she means. Yeah. Alcohol changes my perception of reality, and I can't stand reality. I don't like reality, and that's what alcohol does for me, especially in the beginning when I first start drinking. But guess what? Things change. In the beginning, it was great. I loved drinking and drugging. I loved it. I hear people in meetings say, I wouldn't swap my worst day drinking for my best day sober. You know, and I think, or the vice versa. And I think, well, I don't know where you drank, you know, because I had years of fun. It was great for a long time. You know, drinking and drugging, we like cruised the world a couple of times. Robbing, cheating, lying, screwing our way around the planet. It was great. You know, it was great. I loved it, you know. And then, you know, gradually it wasn't so great. But it weren't bad. You know. Then it kind of got bad, but not real bad. Then it kind of got real bad, but not as bad as you. Then it got as bad as you, but not as bad as I'd seen it. And then it got as bad as I'd seen it, but it never happened to me. And then it got January the 15th, 1983, when alcohol stopped working. Alcohol stopped working on January the 15th, 1983. And by stopping working, I don't mean that it stopped getting me drunk, or it stopped rotting my liver, or it stopped blacking me out, because I'm a blackout drinker. Any other blackout drinkers here? Didn't even know what a blackout was. I didn't. Guy told me, he said, yeah, you was in a blackout. I said, no, I wasn't. I didn't know what it was, but denied it anyway, just in case. Because I didn't know this was a disease of denial. I do today, of course. I wrote a word, denial. D-E-N-I-A-L. Don't even notice I am lying. Or don't even notice it's a lie. I don't notice when I'm lying, and I don't notice when I'm being lied to, especially by a disease that tells me I ain't got it. Anybody relate to that? Anybody relate to the voices that talk to you? Who relates to the voices that talk to you? Yeah, no shit. You know the voices I'm talking about. Them voices that just said, what voices? Them voices. Yeah. You know them voices. Drive you crazy. The voices driving you crazy. Talk, talk, talk. Some days you wake up, voices are sitting on the edge of the bed. Said, I'm glad you're awake. I've been waiting to talk to you. Drive you crazy. You've got a drink to drown the voices. Voices telling you shit, driving you crazy. They tell you all kinds of shit. Tell you, you're a useless turd. That's what you are. You're going to get fired today. Ha, ha, ha. Your girlfriend's cheating on you. Your best friend's getting some. Ha, ha, ha. Drive you crazy. You've got a drink to drown out the voices telling you crazy shit. You know, and I didn't know. And you know, the voices even told me I didn't have a disease. You know, this disease is the only disease known that tells you you ain't got it. This is the only disease that tells you you ain't even got a disease. But it's also the only disease that when we get into recovery from it, we become better than we were before we had it. There's no other disease like that. We become, if we get into recovery and recover from this seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, we become better than we were before we got it. That's good shit, isn't it? See, so I didn't know any of this. I never knew none of this. And those voices, you know, that some of you like me have slipped and slid and had relapse and stuff. You know, because the voices said it was all right. You know the voices. You know how they talk to you. They tell you, well, look, you were sick, but now you're better. And it's been hot today, so you're entitled to a nice cold one. And you've been working hard, so you deserve a break. You could have a little slippy poo. You could have just a drink. One drink won't hurt you. And we believe a lie. If we're not in fit spiritual condition, we believe a lie. And we believe that it'd be all right to take another drink. And the disease says it's okay, you can take a drink. We think, yeah, that's right. I'm better now. I'll have a little drink. Then what does the voice say? Ha ha! Drinking again! Got you again! What a dick! You know? What a dick, drinking again. Got you again. Well, you're a newcomer again now. It never says, stop, I was just kidding. It says, ha ha, got you again. You might as well get shit-faced. Remember that? See, this disease is cunning, baffling and powerful. And I didn't know. I didn't know nothing about it. And here I am. You know, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and I don't know nothing about nothing, and I'm finding out gradually, bit by bit, what to do and how to do it. And I find out I'm alcoholic, and I'm alcoholic, and alcohol changes my perception of reality. And over the period of time, I've crossed over an invisible line and become alcoholic. Because in the beginning, I was an alcoholic because I was enjoying alcohol and it had the physical effect on me. But we got a twofold program. We got obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. So you've got an obsession of the mind, allergy of the body. And it's the obsession of the mind that gets me to do it in the first place. And the obsession sucks me in, takes away my ability to say no, so that then I have to say yes. So that when I do say yes, I think I chose to or wanted to, but didn't. It was the disease that made me do it, the obsession of the mind. An obsession of the mind is a thought to the exclusion of all else, including recovery. See, and it takes away my ability to say no, so I can't resist its demands. And once I take the first drink, we have what we call a phenomenon of craving. A phenomenon of craving is a feeling beyond my mental control. Hope everything comes out all right. See, a phenomenon of craving, described as the allergy of the body, the phenomenon of craving is a feeling beyond my mental control, so that I can't stop from doing it because of the obsession. And once I'm doing it, I can't stop doing it because of the allergy of the body. Is everybody familiar with what I'm talking about here? Twofold illness. Some people say it's a threefold illness, but it ain't. It's a spiritual solution to a twofold illness. We have a spiritual solution, not a spiritual problem. I know in the beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous, it says we have come from all sort of forms of spiritual disease and spiritual sickness. But there ain't no such thing as a spiritual sickness or a spiritual disease. There's no such thing as a diseased God. You can't have a diseased God. There's no such thing as a sick spirit. There's me sick because I'm separated from the spirit, which is the spiritual malady. I'm divorced from the spirit. I'm bankrupt from the spirit. And I'm separated from the spirit. That's what a spiritual malady is. But the spirit ain't disease. There ain't a sick spirit or a diseased God. Like people say, well, you know, it's a threefold disease. Obsession of the mind, allergy of the body, spiritual malady. Well, you know, the malady is the separation from the spirit. Now, as I reconnect with the spirit, I straighten out mentally and physically. It's a spiritual solution, not a spiritual problem. But people seem to think differently than that. And I don't know why, but I don't. And I don't pass that on either. It's kind of weird, really, because I'm separated from the spirit, so I'm not connected with the spirit. So I call it a spiritual disease. Why do we do that? You know, if I ain't got no money, I don't say I've got a financial disease. You know, if I got VD and I need penicillin, but I haven't got any, I don't tell you I've got a penicillin disease. But I'm separated from the spirit and I blame the spirit. It ain't we got to reconnect with the spirit to straighten out physically and mentally. Actually, we have a fourfold solution to a twofold problem. We have a twofold problem, obsession of the mind, allergy of the body, but I have a fourfold solution, physical, mental, spiritual, and emotional. So I've got a fourfold solution to a twofold problem. That's good shit, and it's all in the book. All in the book, beautiful book, Alcoholics Anonymous. But I don't know this when I get here. I have no idea when I get here. I don't know when I get here that on January the 15th, 1983, I hit bottom. See, I didn't even know what hitting bottom was. And it wasn't in the program. Hitting bottom's not written in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I'm not just talking about the translation from English to Icelandic. I was talking to some folk yesterday. Everything I said, they said, oh, translation, different translation. I said, screw you and the translation. You know, I wanted to blame everything on the translation. You know, but I don't give a shit about that. You know, on January the 15th, 1983, I hit bottom. And I didn't know I hit bottom. I didn't know what hitting bottom was. And in the 12 and 12, though Bill never wrote about it in the program, in the 12 and 12, you know, that's in Neely's book at the back, you know, it says, why all this insistence that every alcoholic must hit bottom first. I went, wow. Now, if you think about that, Bill wrote that 12 years after this. But it was so important that he put it in the first step of the 12 steps, and he insisted that every alcoholic must hit bottom first. Now, that's some ballsy shit to say to a bunch of drunks, isn't it? Drunks who don't like authority and don't like being told what to do. We insist that every alcoholic must hit bottom first. Yeah, well, hit bottom on this, Father Mucker. You know. I mean, but that's how important it was. Hitting bottom is so important because it's the process that brings us back to the power we've abandoned to ask for help. And I didn't even know that I'd abandoned the power. But what else would you call it? Because in the first of the 12 steps, it said we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. And I didn't know what that meant. And what hitting bottom is the process that brings us back to the power that we've abandoned to ask for help. And I didn't know that either. I asked people what hitting bottom was. You know what I got told? I got told what the outside circumstances and conditions of their life was at the tail end of their drinking. And I went, wow, that don't make any sense to me. You know, that's different for everybody. Everybody's outside circumstances and conditions at the tail end of their drinking is different. There's no unity in being different. So it didn't make sense to me that hitting bottom was about the outside circumstances and conditions of our life. So what was it? Hitting bottom had to be the same for all of us, not different. And I didn't know what it was. And I asked people, and they kept telling me about these outside circumstances. You know, like family gone, kids gone, living in an abandoned car, no money, jails, institutions, detox. All the things that, you know, happen to alcoholics at the tail end of their drinking. And that didn't add up. Because, you know, apart from the fact that it wasn't hitting bottom anyway, it was very dangerous. Because the outside circumstances and conditions of our life is not what hitting bottom is. We think it is, we say it is, and we believe it is, but it's not. What hitting bottom is an inside job, not an outside circumstance. And that's the same for us. And the danger of believing that the outside circumstances and conditions of our life is the bottom is that as those outside circumstances and conditions get better and improve, we falsely believe we've gotten better and improve and drink again. Anybody know what I'm talking about? See, hitting bottom was an inside job, not an outside circumstance. And so I kept asking people, what does it mean to hit bottom? You'd be amazed at what I got told by you guys. One little group, you know, just recently, I asked this couple, the little girl, I asked her, I said, what was your bottom? Have you hit bottom yet? She said, yes, I've hit bottom. I said, tell me about it. What was your bottom? She said, that's easy. I was feet to the curb, hustling the Broadway, prostituting myself, trying to earn a dollar so I could get loaded. I said, that wasn't your bottom. She said, well, I think it was. I said, I don't give a shit what you think. I said to the dude, what was your bottom, pal? He said, I know exactly what that was. He said, I was locked up in prison, married to Bubba. I said, that wasn't your bottom. He said, it felt like it was. Bad minds. You got bad minds, I can tell. See, hitting bottom, which is so essential for us, is what happened to me on January the 15th, 1983. And in some capacity or other, it happened for you too. Even if you don't realize it, it did. How do I know that? I know that because you're here. So he must have been there because you're here. See, and on January the 15th, 1983, though my circumstances had been a lot worse than they were on January the 15th, 1983, I hadn't hit bottom prior to that, and I did on January the 15th, 1983, and I didn't realize it at the time. I never knew about it at the time. But on January the 15th, 1983, I remember my circumstances. I remember hurting so bad. I remember hurting so bad with torment and terror. And loneliness and you know, just the degradation of untreated alcoholism, where alcohol is no longer working and no longer doing what it's supposed to do and no longer changing my perception of reality. And I don't know what you brought to recovery, but what I brought here was a lot of hurt and hate. Hurt and hate. That's what I brought here. Hurt and hate. I hurt and I hate everything. I can't stand women. I hate women. I hate homos and queers and anybody different. I hate black people. I'm totally racist and prejudiced. I'm from London, England, living in Los Angeles, and I hate foreigners. You know. I can't stand me, and I hate you, and get away from me. Don't come near me. And with all that torment and terror going on inside, I still have to try and present to you a picture of somebody you will like. Because I'm living in this false, phony front where I'm living in pretense and got to try and impress you, and I'm living in loneliness, and if you don't like me, I'm screwed. Anybody know what I'm talking about? And on January the 15th, 1983, hurting so bad, I can remember, without knowing what I was saying and without knowing who I was saying it to and without knowing what the consequences of what I was saying was going to be, I can remember going, help me, please, help me, what's wrong with me? What am I going to do? Help me, what's wrong with me? And asked for help from outside of myself. And I'd never done that. You know, although I'd abandoned God years ago, which I never knew about, he hadn't abandoned me. And when I turned back to him and asked for help, it was almost like he was looking over my shoulder. Because although I'd abandoned him, he hadn't abandoned me. And when I turned back and asked for help, it was like he seemed to say to me, Mick, you silly bastard, I've been waiting for you to ask. Now get yourself over that 12-step fellowship. Sent me to you. I asked for help and he sent me to you. That's why I know that God and the power are different. A lot of people seem to be confused about that, but I ain't. God and the power are different. See, I asked for help and he sent me to you. Because here was the power that he provided for an alcoholic like me, an alcoholic perhaps like you, certainly an alcoholic described in the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous, alcoholics of our kind, it said, and I'm an alcoholic of our kind, regardless of what other kinds there are, I'm an alcoholic of this kind, you know. Here was a power greater than myself that I could, like, come and be a small part of and join you and do what you do, which would enable me to not have to drink one day at a time today. And here it was, right here, right now. This power that we have in rooms like this, all over the world. You know, there's so much power in this room, right here, right now, for an alcoholic to not have to drink today. Think about it. This is the 4th of July, folks. United States Independence Day. Independent from this goddamn disease. That's what we are. We got a power in this room, right here, right now. Enabling, how many people are here? 200, 300, 400? How many people are here? I don't know, a room full of drunks listening to Mickey Bush in Reykjavik on a Saturday night. There must be a power in here, mustn't there? Enabling 400 alkies to not be drinking tonight. Because if we suffer from a disease that we're powerless over and makes me do what I already don't want to do, if I don't have an equal and an opposite power to counteract the power of the disease, I'm screwed. Because if I've got a disease that makes me do what I don't want to do, when I go out there, I'll have to go and get drunk. So I must have a power, mustn't I, to take out there with me. And I got news for you. I don't know Reykjavik very well. But I got a feeling that even Reykjavik ain't going to be too happy if 400 alkies go out and get drunk tonight. I got a feeling that they wouldn't be very happy around here on that. So we must have a power, mustn't we? So why do we say we're powerless? Everybody seems to be walking around going, powerless, powerless, everybody's powerless. Poor little powerless, I'm so powerless, 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 powerless. Powerless over everything, powerless over people, places and things. I don't know why we say that. Powerless, why would we say that? People do. Now, I came in here. If you look at the first step and read it like I do, it's written in the past tense. We admitted we were powerless, that my life had become unmanageable. Not that I am powerless and it is unmanageable. In and of myself, helpless, hopeless and powerless, I couldn't resist the disease's demands, but I'm not in and of myself anymore. This power that we have in rooms like this is of God and from God and provided by God, but it's not God. This room in this power that we have here, it's like the money in the bank. Well, I don't know about Iceland, you know. This money in my pocket is of the bank and from the bank and provided by the bank. But it ain't the bank. There's a lot more to the bank than the money in my pocket. The same as there's a lot more to God than the power he provides alkies to not have to drink today. That's why in the third step we can turn our will and our life over to the care of that God as we've understood God. And in the beautiful book Alcoholics Anonymous, that's precisely what it says. It says he can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. See? You're going to splash your shoes. Should have peed before we started. You know, in the beautiful book it says he can choose any concept of God he likes, provided it makes sense to him. So that's why with my troops, I hold them back. I say, we're going to find something that makes sense to you that you can understand and believe in at 2 o'clock in the morning when them demons are screaming and your ass is in a sling and you got a drink so bad your guts are being ripped out. You better have more going for you than the fact that you don't want to do it. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Yeah, no shit. See, so I want something that I can understand like the book says. So like that's important. But it doesn't matter what you believe in, it can be anything you like. This power that we have in here, this room, is so powerful, it works for all alcoholics. Don't matter what kind of an alcoholic you are. It don't matter if you're atheist, it don't matter if you're agnostic, it don't matter if you don't believe in God, it don't matter if you can even prove there ain't a God. We don't care, nobody cares. As long as you find something that you do believe in, call it what the bloody hell you like. If you don't like the God shit, then call it bloody Mashiganovich. I don't care. Nobody cares. As long as you've got a power that you can believe in, that's like going to work for you, that you can rely on and think in terms of. And I've got news for you. See, look, all the gods, all the powers that are in the room, let's say everybody's got a different power in the room. Let's say there's 400 different powers in the room here, right now. See, there may be, it doesn't matter whether you're a Catholic God, a Jewish God, a Hindu God, a Muslim God, you can have a leg of the chair God, you can have a doorknob God, you can have a pair of tits God, you can have any kind of God you like. Nobody cares. You know, but all the gods have got at least one thing in common with all the other gods. Know what that is? All the gods send their alkies here, don't they? All the gods send their alkies here, because here's the power they provided for an alkie to not have to drink tonight. That's good shit, isn't it? See? So here's a power greater than myself that I can absolutely depend upon to not have to drink today. Step two. In the first two steps, there's no mention of God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, or any other noun. You know, and that's why I don't know why we keep talking about that. The folklore of AA that says a power greater than self has to be God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, Muhammad, or any. It don't say that. There's no mention of God, Jesus, Buddha, Allah, or higher powers, not even mentioned in the first two steps. It says a power greater than self. And that's what we have here. Me plus you is a power greater than me. You plus us is a power greater than you. Together we can do what I couldn't do alone. I couldn't stay sober, you couldn't stay sober, but together we can stay sober. And I don't care what you whether you like. I like the Bible. You know, I like the Bible, B-I-B-L-E, being informed before leaving earth. I like the Bible. You know. I mean, I like the Bible as long as you don't want to treat your alcoholism with it, because the Bible don't treat alcoholism. Come on, love, we won't make fun of you, come on. Everything come out all right? Oh, good. Anybody else want to get up during the speaker? I got some better one-liners than that, yeah. See, all these gods that we got, you know, they all got one thing in common. They all want what's best for their alkies. See, I know what God's will for you is. God wants his kids to be clean and sober, happy, joyous and free. That's what God wants for his kids. God wants his kids to be clean and sober, happy, joyous and free. That's what God's will for you is. If you got a God who don't want that for you, get rid of the bastard, you know. Just tell it to sling itself. You know, God wants you to be clean and sober, happy, joyous and free. And God don't do shit to you to test you. He don't, like, jump out at you in the dark to see if you're serene, you know. We say, God's just testing me. What a crock of shit that is. Anyway, you know, God wants his kids to be clean and sober, happy, joyous and free. And he doesn't just leave it to us. He says, I want you to be clean and sober, happy, joyous and free. And I know that you've got difficulties, so I provided a beautiful, wonderful way of life for you to live by. Here it is, Alcoholics Anonymous 12 Spiritual Steps. Go ahead and have a good life. And that's why we come here together, don't we? We come here together to do precisely that. That's why I'm here in Iceland now. You know, I'm not here because I've got nowhere else to go today. I got loads of places to go. I'm a successful man. I'm a wealthy guy. I can go anywhere in the world. But there's nowhere better for me to be than with my peers, with other people like myself, alcoholics. And in the Bible it said, when any two are gathered in my name, there I will be in your midst. I went, wow, that's what we do in Alcoholics Anonymous. Two alcoholics come together for the purpose of recovery. God comes in our midst and produces a power greater than either of us. So it's produced by us, but it's greater than us, and we can absolutely depend upon it to not have to drink today. One day at a time, I cannot have to drink today, living this beautiful, wonderful way of life with you by just being a small part of a great whole. What a gift that is, folks. You know, powerless. We got so much bloody power in this room right now. You know, I said to my sponsor, what shall I do with all this power over alcohol I got? He said, give it away. Go there at Reykjavik, give it to them. Don't worry, they won't want it. You know. See, but that's what we do. We have a wonderful way of life, and I never knew that when I came here. I never knew nothing about nothing. I never knew who I was or what I was doing or how I was doing it. I don't know why I drink. I come from northwest London, England. Everybody drinks. I didn't know anybody who didn't drink. Everybody drank. And they drank like me or I drank like you, one way or the other. Like, that's what we did. We just drank. Come on, hurry up. Very good. Catch up on some worrying. Yeah. See, what was I talking about? Lady listening, I'm from Northwest London. Everybody drinks. I didn't know why I drank. I don't know why I drink. I just drink. Everybody drinks. We never had a reason to drink. We never had a reason not to drink. Everybody just drank. We drank if the team won. We drank if the team lost. If it was a tie, we drank till there was a result. I mean, I never knew why we drank. Nobody ever asked why we drank. I come in here and all you folk know why you're doing it. I hear it. I heard it here tonight. I heard folk talking about why they drank. And they told me that they drank because they were covering up the pain and they were hiding behind who they was and they had all these issues, like past the tissues, I got issues, you know. And I think, at what stage of the game do you discover that? I can't imagine that, me. I can't imagine going into any pub I ever drank at and saying to the bartender, oh, bartender, hit me with a triple shot of your best booze. Because I can't stand who I am and I want to cover up the pain tonight. Never happened. Never happened. Oh, Mr. Dealer Man, give me an extra rock of crack cocaine because I really feel inadequate. Never happened. Never happened. I have no idea why I do what I do. All I know is that I've always done it. And you know, I came here and I learnt from you guys And I did the work and I discovered things about myself. I discovered, for example, that when I was just a little kid, you know, I did weird shit, you know, and, you know, people didn't understand. And, you know, they'd say, what's wrong with that kid? There's something wrong with that kid. That kid's weird. He don't hear shit right. You know, what's wrong with that kid? Lock him up. Put him away somewhere. He's weird, that kid. He's going to be dangerous, that kid. He don't hear shit right. And I don't know. I'm a little kid. And I don't... They tell me I've got a hearing problem. I don't hear shit right. I went, oh, I got a hearing problem. But what I found out here, as I uncover, discover and discard what was going on, life as a little kid, and if you've got kids, bear this in mind, because kids develop survival techniques, you know, and my survival technique as a little kid was that people would tell me shit, and I wouldn't like it, couldn't stand it, it was too painful, too dysfunctional, so they would tell me shit, and I wouldn't like it, so I would change it to what I did like, and then blame you for telling me. And they go, where does he get this shit from? You know, lock him up. And I don't know, I'm a little kid. And I didn't know it was painful. I didn't know it was dysfunctional. I didn't know, like, we were poor. I don't know whether you're poor or not. I don't know. But I didn't know we were poor. I mean, but we were poor growing up. And it was, you know, I mean, I don't know how to describe that to you, really. Perhaps... Well, we were so poor that if I hadn't have been a boy, I'd have had nothing to play with. You know? Oh, you relate to that, huh? So I grew up, and when I was a little kid, what I was actually doing was changing my perception of reality. But they didn't know how to tell me that. And later on, when I got bigger, I discovered alcohol. And alcohol did for me what I'd been doing as a little kid. Changed my perception of reality so that I could stand being here in this rotten world with you rotten people doing rotten shit. You know? And that's what happened. And they said I had a hearing problem. I didn't have a hearing problem. I didn't hear shit right. I didn't collate things the same as normal people. It used to drive my mum nuts. When I lived in my mum's house in northwest London, you know, I would come home drunk and my mum would be in her bed asleep, or I'm sure she was never asleep. She always had one eye open, you know, my mum. She seemed to sleep with one eye. She never missed a trick, my mum. You couldn't get one over on her in her house. She saw and everything she did. And I hope both of you come on all right. And you know, I would come home drunk, and alcoholics have this insane belief that they know how to be quiet. You know what I'm saying? And you come home and you're shit-faced and you know, mum hears everything. You know, she never missed a trick. And she would hear me stumble bumming around downstairs. Shh. And she'd yell out down the stairs, drunk again, son! And I'd go, so am I, mum. She'd say, I'm not bloody drunk. I've been in bed since 8 o'clock. What's wrong with you, you goddamn weirdo? And I wouldn't get it. And I'd think, well, why did she say she was drunk then? You know? When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, broke, busted, disgusted, and not to be trusted, you know, I eventually met one of them monsters that you meet in Alcoholics Anonymous after a while. You know the ones I'm talking about, those monster sponsors, you know? And they tell you weird shit, you know, like, get a job. My sponsor said, get a job. I said, what? He said, get a job. I said, what do you mean? He said, go to work. I said, what do you mean? He went, get a job, go to work. And I was embarrassed because I'd never had a job. I don't know, you know, how to do a job. And I said, well, I don't know how I'd get there. He said, get a bus. And I felt weird because I'd never ridden a bus. I don't know how to get buses. I'm smart, but I don't know how to get buses, you know. I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll rehearse getting a bus for when I get a job. So I walked down to Sunset Boulevard And buses are going up and down the boulevard full up with people. Thought, I've got to be able to get a bus. Buses are full of people. I thought, oh, all right. So I stood at a bus stop. Bus came along, opened up, and I hopped on the bus. And the conductor said, put some money in the trap. I went, oh, yeah, all right. Put some money in the trap. And stood there and waited for something to happen. And the bus pulled away. And I went flying down the bus. I fell up against this chick with these big ones. She said, move your hands. Well, I don't hear shit right. I went, sure, sure. Squeeze, squeeze. They threw me off the bus. It's not my fault. I don't hear shit right. But you see, I came here and I stuck around. And I joined Alcoholics Anonymous. And I became active in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I didn't know what I was doing. But people guided me and nurtured me and helped me along. And I was crazy. And they said, let go and let God. I said, what? They said, turn it over to God. I said, what? He said, pray to God. I said, fuck off. If I pray to him, he'll know where I am. You know, I've been ducking God for years. You know, they threatened me with God. Everything I did, they said, God will get you for that. God will get you for that. God will get you for that. God was going to get me for everything. I couldn't even play with the old ding-a-ling, for Christ's sake. They said, don't you touch that. God will strike you blind. Well, you know, you tell an alky not to do something and he'll do it, right? So when I did it and I found out how good it felt, I thought, well, I'll risk one eye. But I didn't want to know about none of the God shit when I came round here. But gradually, you know, like I wasn't healthy like you guys. You guys are sitting here and you're spiritual and you're listening. And I couldn't do that. I was crazy. I was insane. And, you know, and I didn't know what was what. And I didn't feel spiritual. I felt like weird. And I felt like I had a devil inside me. You know, and I felt... Do you remember The Exorcist? Anybody remember that movie, The Exorcist? You remember Linda Blair in The Exorcist? When she used to... puke, and I... You know, that's what I felt like. And this devil was in me. And one day I went, get out, devil! Get out, devil! Get out, devil! I went, oh, shit. G-O-D, get out, devil. Oh, that's what I'm going to use. I'm going to use God's name to dispel the devil. They said I can have any God I like. That's what I'm going to have. I'm going to have... And I started reading the book. And I used to clutch this book like this. And I used to walk around clutching the book going, God, God, get out, devil, get out, devil. God, God, get out, devil, get out, devil. You know, and you guys were concerned. You know? You'd say, Mick, are you okay? Are you okay? I said, get away from me, get out, devil. You know, and gradually people said God could mean get off of the drink. Or get off of drugs. I went, oh, I like that. Get off drugs. Get off drink. That's what I'm going to upgrade. I'm going to upgrade. And they said that in the beautiful book was good orderly direction. I went, oh, good. I'll have that now. I'll change that. Good orderly direction. And they said that God could mean group of drunks, group of drug addicts. I went, oh, I like that. I'll have that now. So I upgraded. I kept doing. They said, beyond your wildest dreams. I went, wow. I'd done enough acid to know about dreams. I went, God, that's great. Go on dreaming. Get a G-O-D. I went, wow, that's far out. Now, this God, he's a happening dude, this God. He's not a rotten bastard like they told me. He's a good old dude. Oh, there's God. G-O-D. Good old dude. So I had God as a good old dude then, and gradually it unfolded. And my Native American brothers in the United States taught me about the Great Spirit and, you know, the family, father and mother, I love you, brothers and sisters, you know, in a group. And, you know, you're my brother from another mother or sister from another mister, you know, and we're a family. And the Great Spirit loved everything he created equally. And that worked for me much better than the religion I'd been brought up. I hated the religion that I was raised in. I couldn't stand it. I hated it. You know, and I used to be so sickened by that. You know, When I was growing up, and they used to make me go to confession, and I hated going to confession, and they'd make you go in a little dark room and tell things, and there was a priest or somebody that was going to give you penance and stuff, and I hated it. One day, my dad beat me and made me go to confession. And I was in the little dark room, and I thought, I'll get even with him. So I had a shit in the confession room. And it was a big Irish community. My dad's Irish, and it was a big Irish community. In the parish, every hour on the hour on Sunday, they had mass. The masses were packed to the rafters. And you know, and the parish priest got up in the pulpit, and he was like going ballistic. He said, "Ooh, shit in the confessional." You know, and the whole parish was like, "Oh, somebody's shit in the confessional." And there was me, I was only 10, laughing and sniggering. Shit in the confessional. The next week when they made me go, I went prepared, didn't I? I went in the other side and I fucking shit in that side too. And I left a note, said, "The phantom shitter strikes again." I told you, I was a rotten little bastard, you know. But, you know, nothing like that ever worked. But when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous and you guys, you know, you taught me about this spiritual way of life and this wonderful way of release that I could not have to drink over, and I didn't have to end up in prisons, and I didn't have to go back into jails, and I didn't have to black out no more. You know, and I didn't even know what a blackout was, and you guys told me about blacking out. And I've been having blackouts all my life and doing things in blackouts that I didn't even know about. And I didn't even know what a blackout was. Guy told me I was in a blackout. I said, "No, I was awake. I was doing shit." He said, I said, "Blackout, idiot, not pass out." I know. I didn't know you did shit in a blackout that you didn't remember. Like travel, you know, and other things. I came out of a blackout once walking down a street in Spain. I went out drinking in London. You know, some things happen when you go out drinking in foggy, wet, rainy London and you come out of a blackout and there's sunshine and palm trees. You know, some things happened. And I'm walking down the street with an Eskimo chick. I had this Eskimo chick. I mean, where do we find them, us Alkies? Don't we find these people? Are there any miracle drinkers here in the room? No miracle drinkers? I'll tell you how deep this denial goes. No miracle drinkers. Look, 400 people, no miracle drinkers. Nobody ever go out drinking and have a miracle develop in front of their very eyes. Nobody ever go out drinking and drink somebody good looking. No? Nobody ever do that? Nobody ever go out drinking and some old wretch turns into the delight of your life? You know? Or at least for the night anyway, because you end up next to it, don't you? I mean, I've woken up next to it. I woke up next to it this one day. I went, "Oh, God, get out, ugly bitch, get out." She said, "You get out, this is my house." You know, I don't know, I'm a blackout drinker, I don't know. I don't know what I do, I don't know where I do it, and I just end up in trouble, and they keep locking me up, and I'm putting it away, and I ain't been locked up since January the 15th, 1983. I've stayed clean and sober ever since, and I've loved being clean and sober. I love being an alcoholic. I love being an active member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And things change. You know, I told you what I brought into Alcoholics Anonymous. Hurt and hate. Hurting everything, hating women, hating homos and queers, hating black people, hating like foreign, hating everything. I did a little talk in London just recently, and you know, this little lady, as people were thanking me for talking, this little lady came up, this little fat lady, this little fat gay lady. This little fat gay black lady. This little fat gay black lady from Africa. She came up and she buzzed in front of everyone and stood right here, clutching her beautiful book like this. And I said, "Is that gum somebody's cracking?" How rude. And she stood right here. And I said, "What do you want?" And she looked at me like that. She said, you don't still hate folk, do you? And I went, how long are you sober, love? She said, 31 days. And I saw the gleam in her eye. She said, I wanted you to sign my book. And I said, give me that book, love. And I took her book and I wrote in her book, lots and lots and lots of love. You're a winner. And gave her book back. She clutched it close to her and she went waddling off back to Africa or wherever she came from. But how does that happen? How does a guy like me come out of nut wards for the criminally insane, hurting and hating everything? How do we get to turn that round so that we become an active contributing member, you know, to loving all the very things that you used to hate and despise? How does that happen? It happens right here is how it happens. It happens right here in Alcoholics Anonymous, where alcoholics come together to do together what they couldn't do apart. I couldn't stay sober, you couldn't stay sober, but together we can stay sober. My mum, a lot of you hear me talk about my mum. She never understood me. My mum never understood me till the day she passed. She just passed, my mum. She loved me dearly and never understood me. She used to think I was doing good if I just wasn't doing bad. I heard her tell her neighbour one time. Her neighbour said to her, how's your Mickey, Mary? She said, he's doing great. He hasn't been locked up for 9 months. You know? And she used to believe that if I just wasn't doing bad, I wasn't doing, you know, and of course that's not what we talk about here. And you know, my mum, she loved me dearly, but she didn't understand me. She never understood me till the day she died. You guys know me better than my own mum knows me, because you're alcoholic. And you know, I would go home to London, England, and see my mum every year. I'd come home from Los Angeles to London and go round and see my mum. The first thing I do, I go round and see my mum and I knock on her door and I tell her, Mum, I'm 25 years sober. She'd say, so is the cat. You know? She don't give me no pat on the back for not doing something I shouldn't have done anyway. She's mum. She says, I'm going to bingo. You know? But she suffered the ravagings of my disease, you know, all her life. You know, but she died happy and content and serene and at peace. P-E-A-C-E. People enjoying a contented existence. That's what we have here. I never had any peace when I was drinking and drugging. My mum just passed, and she passed with a smile on her face that her kid was doing good in America. You know, and she was happy, and she hadn't suffered the ravagings of my disease. You know, and she went and passed happy, and you know, she died like... She died with her chest out and a smile on her face. And her neighbours, you know, that used to say to her, how's your Mickey doing in America, Mary? And her chest would go out and she'd tell them how I was doing, because I would tell her and I would send her CDs and tapes to let her know how I was doing. Like if she was alive, I'd send her a CD of this talk and tell her how well I'm doing in Iceland and what have you. And she would go down the Derby and Joan Cup with all the old folk and she would brag about me being in her life and they would say, oh, I bet you're proud of him. And her chest would go out and she'd tell lies. You know, old folk are allowed to do that, aren't they? But you know, her neighbours never used to say, how's your Mickey doing in America, Mary? They used to say, are they going to let your Mickey out of the nut ward for Christmas this year, Mary? And she would hurt and she would cry, see, because she loved me and I didn't know how to do anything about it. And you know, magnificent things happen if you're new around here or if you're in Alcoholics Anonymous. Magnificent things happen in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had so many blessings in Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I've been to the White House twice. I've been to the White House. I've been to Buckingham Palace. I've traveled the world. I've been on 7 different continents. I went to the White House and I was treated as a happening dude. You know? And I sat in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives. You know, you see it on the TV. Sat in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives. And of course, I'm weird. So, you know, I'm sitting in the speaker's chair in America, in Washington, D.C., in the most powerful nation in the world. And I'm sitting in the chair. And it struck me as funny. And it struck me as weird. And I started laughing. And I laughed so hard, I slipped off the chair. And there was congressmen around me and shit. And they picked me up and they went, Mick, what's happening? What's happening? Are you all right? I went, yeah, I'm all right. They said, what's the matter? I said, you'll never understand. They said, what's up? I said, well, I'm crazy. I'm nuts. How does a guy who's crazy and nuts get to sit in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives? They looked at me weird like that. They said, it happens every day. But they took me up to the top of the dome, the Capitol building, and they flew the American flag, the stars and stripes, off the top of the Capitol building. And they have this little ceremony, and they fly the flag, and then they take it down, and they fold it in that special way. It's a diamond shape, and it ends up in a triangle like that. And I saw it at the president's funeral, JFK, and they put it in a glass-fronted cabinet. They put it in a little case, a triangular case, and the stars and stripes from America, and they put on that plaque on that case, this flag flew over America to celebrate Mickey Bush's birthday. And they sent that to my mum in England. And my mum in England had that on her mantelpiece. And it was pride of place in her little house that she had. And all her neighbours would come home and she would brag and be pleased and punch. And she didn't suffer the ravagings of my disease anymore. She didn't have to hurt and cry. And that's how we affect people. That's how we do it. How does that happen? How does a guy like me come out of a nut ward for the criminally insane to get to speak in the sit in the speaker's chair on the floor of the House of Representatives? How do I get to come here to Reykjavik, Iceland? I don't even know where I am. I'm real glad I'm here, but I don't know where here is. You know, how does that happen? Except through this beautiful, wonderful way of life. That we can come through anything, without having to drink over it. Anything. God don't protect me from the storm, he protects me in the storm. I can come through anything without having to drink and drug. Life on life's terms hits hard. Sometimes it creates problems. But that's life on life's terms. What I have here is not a way that prevents problems, it's a way that I can not have to drink when the problems hit the fan. You know what I'm talking about. The fan gets hit. But it ain't my fan anymore. I'm not in charge of the fan. You know? And when the fan gets hit, I don't have to drink over it. What a gift. What a gift. A way of living where an alcoholic of my kind, your kind, our kind, doesn't have to drink one day at a time today. What a gift. G-I-F-T, God is forever there. And you know what? We get to apply these principles to all our affairs, including especially our personal relationships. Now, I don't know about you guys here in Reykjavik. Perhaps you're better at relationships than us there in Santa Monica. I've seen a few of you vamping around here looking, you know. I wrote a word for relationships. R-E-L-A-T-I-O-N-S-H-I-P. Really exciting love affair turns into outrageous nightmare. Sobriety hangs in peril. You know, dear? You know, I got to wrap this up. My telephone number, incidentally, is 818 area code. Are you sober? 818 in the United States. 818 area code. Are you, like Toys R Us, S-O-B-E-R. 818, are you sober? And I love getting your calls. As I got a call one day from Thor. I got a call one day from Thor, and he called me and said like this and that, and we started chit-chatting, and I, I said, I'll come and speak at your group. And he said, we don't have any groups. And I said, well, let's start a group then. And we did. Thor and I and a couple of others that I've seen in here tonight, we started those conventions that you have here in Iceland. And you all know what a gift they are and how progressive. But they started off from a guy making a phone call to another guy and two alcoholics coming together to do together what they couldn't do apart. And that's what we do. We're a contributing member. And nobody's more important than anybody else. 818, are you sober? I know people say that I'm a special dude and I get lots of rah-rah and they say I'm a celebrity. I just got told I was a celebrity by two celebrities in Los Angeles. Two award-winning actresses, Academy Award-winning actresses that I've known a long time, said I was a celebrity in AA. I said, what do you mean? They said, we were making a movie in New York, and we went to two meetings in New York, and in both the meetings they quoted you and mentioned you by name. You're like this AA celebrity. I said, yeah, bloody big deal, a celebrity in an anonymous program. I said, no... You're a celebrity. I'm just a clean and sober member, a contributing member, a small part of a great whole. And I love that. Remember that laughter. They say, if you're laughing, you're relating. And if you're relating to a sick bastard like me, there ain't no doubt about you, pal. I don't get through to no well people. Namaste. Thank you.